cross-border purchasing. Distinct from the mail-order problem is the purchasing by Nebraska residents of taxable goods in other states. There are two situations. First, the person may purchase over-the-counter in the other state, thus paying tax to the other state. The only possible tax saving to the purchaser arises from a difference in the rates. All of Nebraska's neighbors have a sales tax, Montana is the closest state that does not, and the rates are comparable or higher in the other states. The main exception is in Council Bluffs, Iowa, or other Iowa localities not employing a local tax, so that there is a 1 or 1.5% tax differential L8, but this revenue loss is likely reduced somewhat by the fact that Omaha is the principal shopping center in the area. Experience elsewhere suggests that the state with the major shopping center near the border is likely to gain rather than lose by cross-border shopping, even if the tax rate is higher. The other aspect of cross-border purchasing is the purchase of goods outside the state for delivery in Nebraska. In this instance, the tax of the other state does not apply. While the purchaser is legally liable to pay use tax to Nebraska, often this does not occur. Nebraska is able to collect use tax in three instances: motor vehicles bought out of state, which cannot be registered in the state until tax is paid, purchases from the large mail order firms such as Sears, Montgomery Ward, and JCPenney, which also have stores in Nebraska and thus are registered in the state and collect use tax, and business firms subject to audit by Nebraska. But audit coverage is in fact limited, and so many purchases by these FMNs are not caught. How great the net loss and revenue is from cross-border purchasing cannot be determined at all accurately. Even a detailed survey, which is beyond the scope of this study, would not give entirely satisfactory answers, because data of retail sales in various jurisdictions are influenced by many variables besides taxes, and inquiries of shoppers produce biased results. But a summary of the results of studies made in other areas at least throw some light on the possible effects. These can be summarized briefly. H.E. McAllister, in a study of the effects of the sales tax differential at the time between Washington State and Oregon and Idaho, which did not have sales taxes, showed significant effects on retail sales in three border cities of Washington. Two studies involved New York City at the time, when there was a large differential in sales tax rates between the city and adjacent areas. One by William Hamovich showed that a 1% differential would result in a 6% loss in sales. A study by Henry Levin concluded that sales of apparel and furnishings were reduced by 6% for every 1% sales tax rate differential. John L. Mixell, in an extensive study in 1970 of the effects of differentials in sales tax rates between the central city and suburbs in metropolitan areas, showed a substantial loss of sales in the higher tax areas, typically 6 to 7%, for every 1% rate differential. In a 1971 study of the effects of differentials on Illinois border counties, he found lower sales in these counties, except of motor vehicles, subject to effective use tax, and convenience stores. Ronald C. Fisher, in a 1980 study of the effects of sales tax differentials in the Washington, D.C. area, found a substantial effect of differential rates in the taxation of food, a 7% loss in sales for every 1% rate difference. But he found little effect on sales of consumer durables and apparel, in part because many of the stores in the adjacent areas also had stores in the district and therefore collected DC use tax. A study by Mixell and C. Kurt Zorn of the effects of a temporary differential between one city in Mississippi, Bay St. Louis, and surrounding areas concluded that a 1% rate differential would result in a 3% loss in sales. A study by Mixell for the Minnesota Tax Study Commission showed somewhat lower retail sales relative to total county personal income in the border counties than in the non-border counties. The Minnesota 6% tax rate is higher than that of its neighbors, but higher sales in the border counties of apparel, which is exempt in Minnesota but taxed in the neighbor states. The most recent study, by William Fox, of tax differentials on the borders of Tennessee, found that a 1% rate differential produced roughly a 3% loss in sales in one of the three sets of city areas, 1% change in a second, and no noticeable measurable change in the third, the one in which the differential was less. These studies, in general, show that sales tax differentials do have some effect on across-the-border purchasing, but that the effect is typically not of great magnitude. But it is possible that Nebraska is losing as much as 3% of the potential revenue from general retail sales in the border areas with Iowa. Purchases of farm and industrial machinery may involve greater loss of revenue, as the tax differential is much greater. Nebraska taxes purchases of farm machinery and equipment, replacement parts, and the like. Iowa now exempts them, as does Missouri, and Kansas exempts used items. But even if the state of purchase taxes them, the tax can be avoided by taking delivery across the state line. The Nebraska Department of Revenue is convinced that there is substantial loss in revenue, primarily to Kansas, but Kansas believes there is considerable loss in Nebraska. While the purchase is subject to Nebraska use tax, relatively few persons pay it, and it is not easy, and perhaps politically difficult, for enforcement personnel to try to track down such purchases. Out-of-state dealers are unlikely to cooperate in reporting deliveries into Nebraska and neighboring states that do not tax the equipment are not likely to cooperate with Nebraska on the matter, even though they may on purchases taxable in both states. Industrial machinery and equipment is likewise exempt, in part or entirely, in Iowa, Missouri, and Colorado, and taxes refunded in Kansas. The chance of escape from tax somewhat less than with farm equipment, because the firms are subject to audit, and auditors will almost certainly check purchases to uncover taxable ones from out of state on which use tax has not been paid. The limitation, however, is that the audit coverage in Nebraska is so limited that relatively few firms are actually reached by it. Supreme Court decisions affecting the power of the states to enforce use tax. As noted, any purchase of taxable goods made by Nebraska residents from out of state, whether by mail or phone, or in-store purchase, over the counter for delivery in Nebraska, are legally subject to Nebraska use tax. The ability of the states to impose use taxes on out-of-state purchases was long ago upheld by the United States Supreme Court in the Silas Mason decision. But the legal power to collect tax and the practical ability to do so are very different, except in the situations noted above. Most individuals do not pay use tax, and many businesses overlook the tax. The states can attain effective collection of use taxes on most transactions only if they can require the out-of-state vendors to collect the tax from their customers and remit it to the state. The general constitutional rule has been that the state can require a firm to register and collect and remit use tax only if it has some minimum connection or definite link called nexus with the state and thus benefits from state activities. Otherwise, the application of the tax violates both the Interstate Commerce Clause and the Due Process Clause. Over the years, the following situations have been held by the courts to constitute adequate nexus. 1. If the firm has retail outlets in the state, it must collect and remit on its mail order sales. 2. Solicitation by salesmen and agents in the state, including following the Scripto decision in 1960, situations in which the out-of-state seller contracts with a local in-state firm to serve as its representative. 3. Following the National Geographic decision, if the out-of-state firm maintains offices in the state, even if only for a different portion of its activity. In the Standard Press Steel case involving the business occupation tax of the state of Washington, the fact that the out-of-state firm had an employee in the state, though not involved in order-taking, provided nexus. However, in three instances, two of paramount importance, the states were rebuffed in their efforts to widen their jurisdiction. 1. The state of Maryland sought to require a Delaware firm soliciting business in Maryland and delivering to Maryland customers in its own trucks to register and collect and remit use tax. In the Miller Brothers case in 1954, however, the Supreme Court ruled that this activity did not give adequate nexus to enable Maryland to force collection of use tax. 2. The most devastating case from the standpoint of the state was National Bellas Hess, 1967. the state of Illinois has sought to require National Bellis Hess, a large mail order firm located in North Kansas City, Missouri, to collect Andromit, Illinois use tax on the grounds that its solicitation of business in the state via catalogs and other advertising material established adequate nexus. By a 6-3 decision, the Supreme Court held that solicitation of this type did not provide nexus. This has to date prevented states from significantly broadening their enforcement activities against out-of-state firms. 3. In a case of less importance, the Supreme Court ruled in 1969 that California could not require Nevada and Oregon retail firms selling on credit to customers with California addresses to collect and remit use tax, even though the retail firms also had stores in California. The Weber and Good decisions. In two cases, state Supreme Court have upheld the power of the states to require collection of use taxes by out-of-state vendors regularly delivering in the state, in contrast to the Miller Brothers decision. These cases were not carried to the U.S. Supreme Court. The first, in 1980, involved application of the South Dakota use tax to a Nebraska furniture store regularly delivering furniture in its own trucks into South Dakota. The South Dakota Supreme Court held that regular delivery by its own employees made Weber Brothers liable for collection of use tax in restate sales or use tax liability of Weber Furniture, 1980. The Good case, Goods Furniture House Incorporated versus Iowa State Board of Tax Review, 1986, was basically similar. Goods Furniture is located in Kewaunee, Illinois. About 10% of its sales in the period in question were made in Iowa. The firm solicited customers by regular intensive TV advertising on stations broadcasting into Iowa and regularly delivered in its own trucks to customers in Davenport, Bettendorf, and other cities in Iowa, 10 to 12 locations weekly. The truck drivers assembled some items and repaired minor defects. The Iowa law gave the power to the Director of Revenue to designate truck drivers, as well as others, as agents of the vendor. The store argued that since the truck drivers were not salesmen, their presence did not make them agents of the vendor. The vendor also claimed that there was not sufficient nexus to satisfy the Due Process Clause, relying on the U.S. Supreme Court decision in Miller Brothers. The Iowa court, in rejecting these arguments, noted the difference between regular solicitation and delivery by Good versus the lack of regular solicitation and delivery by Miller. The court concluded that the Miller Brothers nexus test, as refined by these later Supreme Court cases, was satisfied by the departments showing that Goods Furniture directly solicited a large volume of Iowa sales by intensive television advertising, then regularly serviced its Iowa customers by delivering merchandise in its own trucks with its own employees. Similar decisions have been made by state Supreme Courts in Vermont and in Ohio. Congressional consideration. The Scripto decision worried mail order firms about possible further enlargement of the state's net to catch out-of-state firms, while Miller Brothers and National Bellis Hess disturbed the state's because they restricted their ability to broaden their use tax net. As a consequence, for 25 years, Congress has considered possible legislation affecting the field. Four series of hearings have been held. The ACIR has studied the issue and offered recommendations, and state groups have likewise given it substantial attention. But no legislation has been enacted. The basic situation today is most certainly unsatisfactory. The states are losing substantial revenue. In-state retailers are subject to competition from out-of-state firms not remitting tax. Many residents of the state break the law, often unknowingly, when they buy out-of-state and do not remit use tax. Out-of-state retailers who are caught because they are interpreted to have nexus in the state compete with firms that do not have nexus. The long discussions in Congress have been fruitless because of the inability of the various groups to compromise. The mail order firms, with a strongly organized lobby, have fought any effort to increase the power of the states, and the business community generally has been unsympathetic to federal action, even though some segments are injured by the present treatment. On the other side, the state governments, particularly the revenue officials and the state organizations, have fought hard to prevent any curtailment of their present powers and to obtain wider scope. the earlier proposals in Congress, the Willis and Mathias bills, would have codified the existing situation, broadened the powers of the states in some respects, but narrowed them in others. Thus, while supported by the business community, they were opposed by the states, largely because they omitted from tax collection liability firms whose only activity in the state was direct advertising. Other bills in the 1970s were somewhat comparable. While the failure of Congress to act was in part a product of the inability of the states and business groups to agree, partly it resulted from linkage of the sales use tax issue with legislation relating to state corporate income taxation. Beyond this was the difficulty of finding an entirely satisfactory solution, as outlined below. There is widespread agreement, except by the direct mail order firms, that the present situation is intolerable and will grow worse if action is not taken. There is also substantial agreement that firms directly soliciting business in the state or delivering into the state other than by common carrier should be required to register and collect use tax. But there are several other issues. 1. The problems and cost of compliance for small firms selling only limited amounts into a state would be intolerably high. This leads to suggestions for a de minimis small business exemption rule, but how high should the figure be? What figure constitutes a reasonable balance between revenue and concerns of in-state retailers and the compliance costs of out-of-state vendors? Furthermore, should the rule be based on the firm's overall total sales or on total taxable sales upon the sales into a particular state? 2. Appropriate treatment has been greatly complicated by the spread of local sales taxes, of which there are nearly 7,000 nationwide. To require the mail order firms selling into a number of states to collect local taxes as well as state tax would encounter severe opposition, especially when the local taxes are locally collected and differ from the state tax in coverage. Conforming collection to the state tax would be acceptable in most cases, but there are instances such as New York City, in which the local tax exceeds that of the state. 3. Should the present firms now required to register and collect tax be forced to continue on the present basis, or be entitled to the de minimis rule provided for firms not now registered? 4. Should out-of-state vendors be provided compensation for their work in collecting and remitting tax? States already compensating in-state retailers, such as Nebraska, would have no problem, but those states not doing so would be placed in a difficult situation. To provide compensation for all vendors could easily result in a net revenue loss. Yet compensating out-of-state vendors, but not in-state vendors, would be politically difficult. 5. Finally, there is the problem of failure of customers to remit sales tax to the vendor on mail order and related purchases. Will the vendor owe the appropriate amount to the state? The tasks for the vendor of collecting the additional amount on small transactions would be very substantial relative to the money involved, yet failure to insist on payment would be unfair to in-state retailers who would not have the equivalent privilege. Recent proposals. The Advisory Commission on Intergovernmental Relations, following its extensive review of the issues, recommended that federal legislation be enacted that would in effect offset national BLSS. In summary, the provisions would be as follows. 1. Mail order vendors would be required to collect and remit use tax on sales delivered in the state if the mail order vendor engages in regular or systematic solicitation of sales in that state through a catalog, advertising, or other means. 2. Under a de minimis rule, firms with total annual sales under perhaps $12.5 million would be free of the requirement. 3. In states with local sales taxes, the state would determine whether out-of-state vendors should collect the state rate only, or the state rate, plus a single local rate. The National Association of Tax Administrators, NATA, developed a similar proposal. It differed in its definition of de minimis to be based upon annual sales into each state of less than $100,000, or taxable sales under $25,000. It likewise differed with regard to local taxes. Out-of-state vendors would be required to collect local taxes only if, 1, the local rate and coverage were uniform throughout the state, 2, they were state collected, and, 3, The out-of-state firms need not account for the local taxes by local jurisdiction. The state would allocate the total to local units. Only quarterly returns would be required. In the spring of 1986, Representative Jack Brooks of Texas introduced the Equity in Interstate Competition Act, which basically was similar to the NADA proposal, except that it proposed a $12 million de minimis rule, coupled with a rule of sales under $500,000 into a particular state. With regard to local taxes, the provisions are the same as those of the NADA bill proposal. Somewhat similar bills have been introduced by Representative Byron Dorgan of North Dakota and Senator Thad Stevens of Mississippi. Hearings were held in May 1987. There is no assurance, of course, that a measure will be enacted. If it is, the de minimis figure in the Brooks bill is so high that the effectiveness will be reduced. One serious problem with de minimis rules is that firms seeking to avoid the requirement may split, on paper, into several firms to escape the rule, as has happened with state cigarette taxes. There is also a constitutional issue about the power of Congress to offset national bell assess. If the unconstitutionality of the state action is based on the Interstate Commerce Clause, which Congress has power over, there is no question that Congress can remedy the situation. But if it is based on the Due Process Clause, established by the 14th Amendment, there is question whether, constitutionally, Congress may act. Both clauses are mentioned in the decisions. Two principal constitutional authorities on the issue, Jerome Hellerstedt and Paul J. Hartman, argue that there probably is no constitutional barrier to congressional action, that national bell assess is based primarily on the Commerce Clause, and that Congress can broaden the powers of the states under the Due Process Clause. Partial solutions. Meanwhile, what can Nebraska do to improve the situation? One step taken has been to amend the tax law to require firms soliciting business in the state to collect and remit tax, as California and other states have done. A bill to require out-of-state firms delivering into Nebraska to either collect and remit tax or provide the state with a list of purchasers was passed in 1986, but vetoed by Governor Kerry. But in 1987, with the enactment of LB 304, introduced by Senator Hefner and signed by Governor Orr, effective October 1, 1987, firms regularly soliciting business in the state are required to register and collect and remit tax. Some of the provisions are as follows: soliciting retail sales of tangible personal property from residents of this state on a continuous, regular, or systematic basis by means of advertising which is broadcast from or relayed from a transmitter within this state, or distributed from a location within this state, soliciting orders from residents of this state for tangible personal property by mail, if the solicitations are continuous, regular, seasonal, or systematic, and if the retailer benefits from any banking, financing, debt collection, or marketing activities occurring in this state or benefits from the location in this state of authorized installation, servicing, or repair facilities, being owned or controlled by the same interests which own or control any retailer engaged in business in the same or similar line of business in this state, or maintaining or having a franchisee or licensee operating under the retailer's trade name in this state, if the franchisee or licensee is required to collect the tax under the Nebraska Revenue Act of 1967. One purpose of the legislation was to join with other states in an effort to pressure out-of-state sellers to register and the federal government to take action and to have the act ready if such action is taken. For the change to be effective revenue-wise, it will be necessary for the U.S. Supreme Court to reverse the national bell assess decision, and, although it is a definite possibility, there is no assurance that it will. Since other larger states are pressing the issue of constitutionality in the court, Nebraska might just as well await the outcome of these suits and let the larger states bear the litigation costs that are involved. Moreover, the Nebraska legislation is now in order. Some business concerns in Nebraska engaged in interstate mail order selling are reluctant to see the state push this type of legislation for fear that it will backfire, causing other states to take similar action, but this action is imperative. There are other partial alternatives, make further use of informal and formal cooperative agreements with neighboring states, particularly Iowa, Kansas, and Missouri, for joint audit and reciprocal arrangements, whereby each state will report findings from audits indicating sales into the other state. This would encourage out-of-state firms to register so that their customers would not be bothered by Nebraska, but it leaves the costly task for Nebraska of seeking to track down the purchasers in the state, feasible at best only on very large purchases. Formal agreements among states have not proven highly effective in the past, but new ones have recently been established. The most significant of these in the Midwest is the Great Lakes Interstate Sales Compact, formed by Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Michigan, Minnesota, and Wisconsin, as of July 16, 1986. In January 1987, each of the states sent letters to all registered vendors requesting that they register and collect use tax in any compact state into which they make sales. The Tax Administration News reports that as of June 1987, 8,000 new use tax registrations were processed by the member states. Other efforts to obtain use tax registrations have been undertaken. Nebraska is now involved in discussions with the compact members for increased cooperation. Following the patterns of other states, Nebraska can take other steps to get out-of-state, mostly border area, firms to register and to pursue purchasers of large, more expensive items, but implementing these policies requires personnel. Iowa reports substantial success in getting Omaha firms to register and collect tax. Possible measures include pressuring out-of-state firms that regularly deliver into Nebraska to register and collect tax, in line with the Weber and Good decisions, without drastic change in legislation. Notation: an audit of out-of-state firms that make frequent taxable sales into the state, and attempt to get these firms to register. The in-state customer firms may encourage their out-of-state suppliers to register. Increasing coverage for goods that must be registered in the state, with payment of use tax mandatory before registration. This rule is standard with motor vehicles. It can be extended to pleasure boats, private planes, snowmobiles, and other items. Checking waybills at truckway scales near the state boundaries to discover large item goods bound for Nebraska destinations. Wyoming has used such a program in the past. Add a line on the income tax return form. Indiana and several other states have added a line to the state income tax return for reporting use tax due. This approach costs very little and does yield some additional money, although it does add one more complication to the return. Up to now, Nebraska apparently has lost considerable revenue, reportedly mostly to Kansas, but likely some to Iowa and Missouri, on out-of-state purchases of farm equipment. If this equipment is exempted, the evasion will disappear, though of course the revenue will not be recovered. If it is not, further attention, particularly by compliance officers, is warranted by checking liens and perhaps even by requiring registry without charge of the more expensive items of farm machinery. Most of these steps require expenditure of money and use of scarce personnel, and should not be undertaken unless it is clear that the gains will exceed the costs. The other approaches suggested should at least be considered. But there can be no significant solution without federal action, and even the proposed measures will not solve the problem completely because of the necessary de minimis rule.